Welcome to the Two Girls with Grief book club. We might laugh and we might cry, but we always read.
Welcome to our first official session of our Two Girls with Grief book club. We are talking about the book Indian Age Mart. And we started this book club. I'll share my reasons is because I feel like books really take you to another place. You can really lose your mind in thought and in story. And sometimes you just need that break from grief to live another life. And something I find really healing about reading other people's grief stories, for some reason, to me, that is really healing to just to read about how people figure it out and the other pain that people feel and like how they sort that out for themselves and how they kind of navigate the world, because I think there's no right or wrong way to do that and everyone's different, but it's such a confusing space to me because you don't know where grief takes you in this life, unfortunately. So for me, I enjoy reading stories about grief more so. So this is the first like memoir that I've read and kind of real story I have. And we may try to read actual grief literature books. So far, those haven't been my favorite, but I think we'll give them a shot in this book club as well. But for me, I just think it's a nice break. And we're not only going to do grief books, we're going to throw in, when we feel like we need a grief break, we're going to throw in some fun books and we'll share why we chose them. But Kendall, share a little bit more about your inspiration for the book club.
Like you and I, we both love books, and this book stood out to me as one of the very few books that I connected to on like such a deeper level of like someone actually articulating how I was feeling at the time with my grief. It was kind of like the moment of, oh my gosh, she said what I was thinking this whole time. And it's very relatable, I think, in that sense of one of the notes that I took down is like, she lost her mom when her mom was 56 and she was 25. And my dad was 56 and I was 24. And so it's like uniquely like the same age of like me and my dad. And I'm sure like you related to that too, since you were around the same age. Like, I found that very relatable. And I like that she doesn't shy away from the hard parts. I feel like with a lot of grief books, people want to focus on the happy memories and the things that they loved about the person. And I am the same way. Like, I like to focus on the happy memories of my dad and what a great person he is. But the book doesn't shy away from kind of the hard parts and the complicated parts and the awkward parts. And I think that's just very realistic to real life and like how complicated grief can really be, versus like, you know, a lot of people thinking like, oh, it's, you're going to be healing and you should be happy and like all this stuff. And it's like, or your grief can be super complicated because your relationship with the person who passed is also complicated.
Yeah, I feel like there's this, I feel like it's very common for people to feel like, I can't think anything negative about someone that's passed away.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's become where we treat people that have passed like angels that have never done anything wrong.
Yeah.
I think that also can kind of halt your grief healing, because if you don't come to terms with your actual issue with them, your actual ups and downs with them, it's hard to kind of process it if you're still holding on to stuff.
Yeah.
And it's totally okay that someone that passed away was good and bad, or maybe more bad depending on the loss of the situation. Bad people exist, unfortunately. So I think you have to accept that and accept like the complexity of losing someone if you have a difficult relationship. And I think this book does it really well from what I've read so far. We've only gone through chapters 1 through 5, but it's more complicated than I thought it was kind of going into the book, for sure. But I'm going to read the little summary for everyone that hasn't read the book, and then we're going to share more of our thoughts a little bit, dig deeper into it after. So, hopefully I pronounced her name right. So, when Michelle Zahner, the indie rock musician known as Japanese Breakfast, was in her mid-20s, working as a waitress and struggling to launch her music career in Philadelphia, she got a call that her mother was ill. She put her life on hold and flew home to Eugene, Oregon to be with her mother through the final excruciating months of her battle with cancer. This is on our searingly candid coming of age story of growing apart from and then back together with her Korean identity and forging her own path in the wake of devastating loss. With humor and heart, she tells of growing up Asian American, straining to meet her mother's expectations, moving across the country, and returning home to reckon with grief. And through it all, she savors the unexpected solace of weekly trips to her favorite Asian grocery store. Vivacious and plain-spoken, lyrical and honest, Crying in H Mart is an unflinching, powerful story of family, food, grief, and love. So that is the little summary of the book, if you're interested in joining us for this journey on the book. So do you want to kick it off on your thoughts on chapters 1-5?
Yeah, so I'll be honest, I've read the whole book before. I read it a couple years ago on an audiobook. And so reading it again, I forgot a lot of the things. And one thing that just stood out is, like, I know when I mentioned the book and why we should read it, there was so much emphasis on the food. And all that came flooding back to me of her descriptions of meals and flavors and seasonings and just what that all evokes for her. And I swear I get so hungry reading this book again. But I think like at the core of this book, it's really about love, even if it looks complicated. And love also looks like that through cooking and sharing meals with people. And I love that she hits on that topic, because I think we can all agree we all have that favorite dish our mom made, and we all have a favorite dish that our family eats at, you know, a special holiday. And it's something so unifying. And I think as she goes through the books and kind of explains more with her relationship with her mom, that food is a unifier, and food is something that can bring people together. There's love, and you can and cry over food, but like, it's something we all share.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm 75% Filipino, 25% Irish English. And I feel like I can relate to so many different things in the book. I think growing up around Filipino food and dishes my mom cooked or even my dad cooked, I think there's so many strong memories. I think I mentioned in our announcement that I have cried in Seafood City, which is the Filipino version. So similar kind of experiences with that, and just kind of the memories of food and connection and how it connects. I think so many times people share their love through food and share their culture through food. I think that's something that is beautifully written in the book. It's something I can really relate to as well. I think also other things she talked about, I think initially she talked about a little bit, but not, I think she's probably going to dive more into it throughout the book, but she talks about how people praised her in Korea for being basically in the Filipino way. And I think other cultures say it too, is like mestiza. I don't know the word. I don't remember what word she referred to it in for Korean, but basically she's half white. She's half Korean. And similar to growing up Filipino, and I was very fair skinned growing up. And I always got complimented going with my mom places, like, oh, she's so mestiza. Like, that's so great. Like, she looks, basically, it's like I looked mixed. And so I really related to that kind of thing. I don't think I grew up really feeling too much, like, ever feeling like too much otherness with my friends growing up. Yeah. I do, like, have a clear memory of one guy that said something off to me, but besides that, I don't feel like I ever really felt that, like, in middle school growing mm-hmm. up. So, but I remember that craze so much that I was like, oh, you're mixed, and how highly people thought of that. So I think I'm in, like, this weird little, it's like I'm 75% Filipino, and I don't think we'll talk about 75%ers enough, but, side note, but I get that, where, like, I got so much praise for that being just, like, how I looked and looking mixed. And it's a weird thing. It's a very interesting thing being American. And then, you know, you're also have other culture identity.
Yeah.
So I understand. I feel like a little bit of those feelings. I obviously feel like being Korean is different than being Filipino American or American. But there was a lot of things I felt very relatable to me and growing up and kind of the identity of, like, you're American, but you also have roots to your culture and to the roots of your other people, you know, like, your country, and but you're also American. So I think it's a very complicated thing that I don't know that there's a perfect mesh of that. Yeah. Or, you know, how can you be Filipino enough or American enough? Like, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. But so I definitely understand a lot of those feelings, and I'm interested in hearing kind of how she kind of goes about it and explains that throughout the story. But it definitely was, I don't know how you felt with like the complicated relationship with her mom. I was not expecting it to be that complicated. I don't know if I just was like naive or it just like wasn't the relationship with my mom that I was not expecting it to be so complicated.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on their relationship?
Yeah. So far. It's something I don't really have in regards to my father, because I would say we had a very like healthy father-daughter relationship. Although, you know, I haven't mentioned my mom too much on the podcast, and that is for a reason of that. Our relationship is very difficult, and I'm still trying to navigate that all myself. And so that is something I related to a lot, with kind of like the high highs and the low lows with a parent that you are trying to evoke love from, like the crazy things a kid tries to do to get praise and attention from a parent that might be a little bit more guarded with that. And, you know, she does talk about her relationship with her father in the book, and she goes more into that. You know, this story is definitely about her relationship with her mom, and it's kind of like she had a better relationship with her father too, but her father is alive. So like, it's trying to reckon with that grief. And how do you reckon with that grief when there is so much hardship that might lead to like mental health struggle, as well as like there's so much love there too. And it's hard to distinguish that as a child. And as like, I think we're kind of like, she kind of flips around in her life from being like a mid 20-year-old to like her teenage mm-hmm. years to being a kid. I love that it seems like no matter where you come from or who you're from or what you're like, your teenage years are hard regardless. I really love that she doesn't shy away from, like, she was a teenage girl just wanting to play music and just trying to like be a struggling artist. And she loved that. And her mom didn't understand that or really appreciate that. That's hard to balance when you're trying to like seek love from somebody who isn't very forthcoming with it, and then trying to chase your passion and something that you're really excited about. And she does a good job, I think, really illustrating that struggle, that you can really put yourself in her shoes and connect with her in that way of like, you know, now she's kind of talking in retrospect about the book, so she already is kind of knowing what happens. But and, you know, and I think that there's a whole conversation as well around the beauty standard that her mother, you know, kind of saw the world through and then kind of applied to her own daughter. What does beauty look like? And how, you know, on one end, you're like, as a mom, you want your daughter to be beautiful so she can like have the best chance of finding a husband and find security. But then on the other end, it's not, you know, Michelle's choice to like subscribe to all these beauty standards that her mom is trying to impose upon her. And so I think that's also another like conversation. It's obviously like Korean skincare is like such a big thing.
Yeah.
And I see it everywhere on Instagram.
I think it's Korea that might be like the top like plastic surgery.
Oh yeah, okay.
I think it's Korea over Japan, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really hard standard. Especially like K-pop, yeah. I know like a lot of people get work done. Like, I think that's a really hard standard to try to reach. That's basically it's not attainable. And I think that's really hard. If the most attainable or the beauty standard is not natural. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, in a lot of cases, I can't really speak, you know, I can't speak on Korean culture, but I can speak on like for Filipinos.
Yeah. So
it's very common to get like nose jobs and skin lighteners. I feel like there's a nose that like, I don't know if it's just the easiest nose job from a certain type of Filipino nose. I'm not sure. Mm-mm. But I feel like it's, to me, it's noticeable. I don't know if it'd be noticeable to other people.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where that beauty standard is, it's not the natural look, although it's not every, if there's certain like flatter nose that Filipinos really hate. So not all Filipinos, but some Filipinos hate, that's what they get fixed. But I also know, like, I grew up really pale. I also grew up with a nose that is not typical, like, or is it like a little bit more of a mixed nose in a sense. So I think it's also hard when that's not my experience. And my parents, thankfully, were very, very loving, very told me I could do whatever I wanted. They weren't that typical that is associated with like Asian parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard of other Filipino parents being more that very strict type of parent. And luckily, my parents were not like that. They very much were like, go your path, you know, very supportive. But I also see where that can be hard. Because there's still, I feel like, it's hard when you grew up here and your parents didn't.
Yeah.
And in ways that can kind of cause confusion with how you display love. And I think that is also a big topic in the book. Of how her mom displayed love and how she saw her mom's mom display love is different than like how she wanted to receive love or what, you know, what she expected.
Yeah.
So I think that is also difficult of just kind of being an immigrant's child, or sometimes that can be different. You know, there's little things. It's like your parents don't know what it's like to like apply for scholarships or like different things. Like if they haven't had to do it, you know, they're not going to have experience with that. And I think there's just like things like that. I don't know exactly like her experience, but I think it's mm-hmm. very relatable if I think about kind of stuff with my parents.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was not expecting it to be as complicated for sure. And there's one line in there where her mom says, no one's going to love you like your mother does. And although I think in the book, it was more of like a threatening type of thing.
Yeah.
Lovingly threatening. I it hit me that I took that as no one's going to love me as much as my parents and my sister did. Mm-hmm. And that kind of feeling of like that, gut punch of like, I miss them and that love. Thankfully, my relationship with my mom wasn't complicated like that. But it just made me think in the other way of just like, it feels so true in so many ways because you're just missing so much love. And that one really cut me deep.
Yeah. I think like when she gives the example about the friend that she likes to go and spend the night at, and she kind of like, I don't want to say idolizes the relationship with her friend and her friend's mom, where I think like her mom is like, well, why don't you go to so-and-so's mom? She's a better mom than me. And I think like that is such a difficult place for a kid to be in, to be like, well, this is clearly a more healthy relationship. You're looking at your friend and your friend's mom and you're like, they have a healthy, normal, loving relationship. And I think it's very natural for children to compare that and then look at themselves and be like, that's not similar. But the line that like stood out in that example was, sometimes it's nice to irrationally blame someone else. And in this case, like the other mom that was a part of the example. It's, you know, I kind of have had the same thoughts of like, man, if only one of my parents was like so-and-so's parents, like I would have a very different situation and a very different outcome.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, she's thinking back on all these memories post loss and thinking like these were all the things I was feeling and they're true. But they also simultaneously exist in a place of love as well. And I think that adds to like, none of this is an easy answer, but I think it is so true to the complication of like, you love someone who may have not been the best person in your life, but then you're grieving them at the same time. And it's just like multiple curveballs you're trying to navigate.
Yeah. And I think even you see it early on, it's kind of her realizing where her mom was showing her love, that maybe she didn't see that as a child.
Yeah.
And it's the way that her mom showed love. And I think that's a very complex thing of just not feeling that love growing up and just kind of the implications of that growing up without that. But even though like you did have it, you just didn't feel it at the time in that way. So I think it's very interesting. And it did get like, at the end, the chapter ends, like, spoiler alert. Oh, it's not really a huge spoiler. I feel like it just was a bomb that her mom dropped on her when she's having issues in school, truancy, and I think a lot of like very strict parents would not be okay with that at all. And but her mom basically told her, like, you were such a bad kid and I got an abortion because of you. And
oh, that was heavy.
I think a lot of even my mom, so she would say like random sayings, but she would never say it in English. So like sometimes she would say, I guess, harsh things, but I didn't know it. And it wouldn't be like, oh, I got an abortion because of you or anything like that. But like, just always like, getting mad, like they'd be like Tagalog expressions or Bicolani expressions, I'm not sure. But I didn't understand it. So like, sometimes she'd just go off in like Tagalog or whatever, and I just wouldn't know what she was saying. And when some of my cousins learned Tagalog, is that I think Filipino expressions are very dramatic and not meant to be literal. There's a saying, I hope lightning strikes you. Like, there's stuff that they say that's very dramatic.
Yeah.
I would joke with mom, just because I understand doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. Like, and she would never say it in, like, a serious, like, way. And she would just, we kind of laugh about it. But I'm like, just because I don't know what you're saying doesn't mean it doesn't hurt my feelings. And, you know, we kind of joke about it. But I can only imagine that and actually saying that kind of harsh stuff to your face. And I think that part of that is cultural, though I do think probably every culture has parents that say stuff that they didn't mean and out of anger or out of fear. And something I always think about is like, it's your parents' first time living their life too, and no one's perfect.
Yeah.
I think that's really hard when you think like your parents have all the answers and all the stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm an adult. I can't have any answers for so many different things. Like,
they're just as clueless as us.
They're just humans trying to live and survive, and it's crazy. So, yeah, I think she'll probably come to terms with that a little bit more in the story, but it definitely is interesting. And I don't think she's dived too much into the actual sadness and the sickness too much so far.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that part will probably be a little bit harder to read.
Yeah.
A little bit more painfully relatable.
Yeah. If I remember right, like there is caregiving aspects of it and like that interesting role reversal. And when you have a mother with quite a character like her mom, you can kind of see like, wow, this is an interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
I like how though, like you were like, people express love very differently. And I think like the line she keeps like repeating in a couple of the chapters was like, stop putting so much sauce on your food. And I think it was like, I don't remember what the sauce is, but she's like, you're going to make it too salty. And it's like, that's her expression of trying to show her daughter that she loves her, but it's also kind of controlling. And it's like, even Michelle doesn't feel like she could put her, the own quantity of sauce on her own food to her own taste.
A little abstract and, way of showing that love.
Yeah. And she uses this example a couple of times, and I think it goes to show, like, as a young kid, she's not noticing this as her mom trying to express love. Although, like, as she's older and reflecting, these are the moments that she could tell that her mom was trying to show love to her. But at the time, is when a kid, you're just like, you're just trying to be controlling. You're just trying to like tell me what to do. And like, how do you know how much sauce I want on my food? Like,
yeah,
go F off, you know? Like, and so it's interesting that you could read this book in one perspective and then have a very different life experience throughout, you know, grief, and then read this again and interpret things very differently.
Yeah, this is my first time, so everything is new to me, but so
far, imagine it's shocking in some parts.
Yeah, so far so good, and other people in our group also, our support group also recommended it, so I'm excited to finish it. I think for the next chapters, maybe let's do 6 through 15.
That's good. Yeah,
we're gonna do 6 through 15 and share our thoughts, and I hope you also follow along with us, share your ideas. Please message us on TikTok, Two Girls with Grief Pod, on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. Message us there, or you can email us at twogirlswithgrief@gmail.com. If you've read the book, if you're joining along with us, we'd love to hear your thoughts and your perspective. I feel like depending on your grief experience and even your culture, like you can kind of take away so many different things from this book and feel so many different things. And it feels very real reading her book.
Yeah.
You know, it feels very, you kind of are picturing these scenarios. So I'm interested in hearing other people's perspectives too on it and kind of their thoughts. So please share with us. We'd love to hear it, and please follow along. One girl did comment she bought the book. So
yay! Yeah.
So yay, hopefully you are listening and joining us. And of course, our new episode will be on Tuesday. And that is part two of Everything You Know About Grief Is Wrong. That is releasing tomorrow. So check out part two of our two-parter episode.
Very excited. I hope y'all all enjoyed the book so far. And we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.